Hello.
Hello. Hi.
Hi.
How are you? It's the middle of Saturday? What? It's like just the middle of the day on a Saturday? The episode was supposed to come out yesterday. It didn't. Just the middle of the day on a Saturday. I've just been riding horses, man. And my butt hurts, and my back hurts, and my thighs hurt, and my shoulders hurt. And I'm not good at it. And it's been a little distracting. I wasn't able to finish the episode and get it up by Friday morning like I usually like to. Got a little delayed. But yeah, I've been out here riding horses, dude. And I'm doing it, but I don't feel like I'm getting any better. And it doesn't feel good. But whatever. I'm still going, you know. Today I told my instructor, hey, I almost fell off today, and I had the thought, you know, I'm not that high from the ground. I think I'd be okay if I fell. And I thought that that was like an improvement. I thought that that was a good thing. I was like, how cool is that, right? I was like, I wasn't that scared. I thought I might fall, and I thought that that would be okay if I fell. And he was like, listen, man, you don't want to fall. And I was like, I know I don't want to fall. He was like, it can be really rough. He's like, it can be okay, but it can also be really bad. And I was like, all right, I'm trying to tell you that I'm less scared of falling than I used to be, and that I think that's progress. And then he like launched into a story about how he was like, a couple years ago, I was breaking these horses for this woman out in Germany, and this one horse was really wild, and this guy's been riding horses for 60 years. And he was like, and one of the horses just bucked back and threw me. And he's like, I broke four ribs. I cracked a vertebrae in my back. And he's like, I bruised my tailbone. And had bruises all up and down my body. He's like, I could barely walk for a few days. And I was like, hey, buddy, I'm trying to tell you that I'm getting less fearful on the horses, and you're not helping me. I mean, he's telling me the truth. So kudos to him for doing that. But it was a little bit of a one step back moment for me today where I was like, okay, I'm scared again. But whatever, I'm going back tomorrow to do more riding and to be bad again and to hurt my butt again and my back. And that's great. People freaking out about drag queens. How about that, huh? That's the thing right now for this week. But it's going to be a thing, I think, all the way up through the 2024 presidential election. I do think that this is going to continue being the main wedge issue in like the culture war of the presidential campaign, is like attacks on the LGBTQIA plus community. So vilifying and attacking trans people, vilifying and attacking, you know, attacking, you know, the gender ideology of the left, which just says that gender is a spectrum and that there are multiple ways that people can present. And you know, coming after things like drag, you know, coming after queer people and queer culture and making queer people the enemy, you know, that historically marginalized group, just going after them with gusto. And so people are freaking out about drag. I think I'm going to have my friend Sequoia back on the show to do another drag episode. About a year and a half, maybe 2 years ago, I had my friend Sequoia on the show, and we just talked about drag just as a form, just like me as a fan of drag and Sequoia as a drag performer. We just sort of like nerded out about drag. You can listen to that episode if you want, if you've never heard it. It's a good episode, good conversation. But I think I might have to have her back on the show to talk about like what it's been like being a professional drag performer in this climate where the heat is getting turned up by homophobic detractors of the form and people who want to opportunistically jump on any scenario that allows them to paint queer people as dangerous predators who are grooming kids and coming after children. God, it's just, they're so fucking transparent, right? They're just so full of shit, right? And it's just so obvious. It's just, and it's so gross. It's so gross to disingenuously pretend like the thing that you care about more than anything else in the world is the safety and well-being of children, while simultaneously not really caring at all about gun violence in America. Just being like, no, Second Amendment, sorry, it's in the Constitution, too bad. We'll have to maybe put one entrance in and out of schools to see if we can stop kids getting killed at school so often. It's the leading cause of death for children in America right now is gun violence. Like, kids are just getting slaughtered at school. And these people who are just so scared for their kids, who really, really care about kids, the only thing they really seem to care about is, like, making sure that there's no gay teachers, gay or trans teachers, talking about being gay or trans in front of their kids and making sure that their kids never see a drag queen. God, so many people who have no idea what the fuck drag even is. But yeah, these people who are just, it's so transparent that they don't actually give a shit about kids, you know? Try to get these people to support programs like Universal Pre-K or free lunch for kids in schools, you know, just across the board, kids get free lunch. Nope. Don't want it. Try to get these people concerned about the fact that statistically kids are way more likely to be abused or assaulted by someone, by a straight white male member of their own family or by someone that they know in their own community, usually someone at their church, that is statistically way, way, way more likely to happen in those arenas than it is to happen at a drag show or a pride event, you know? Just wouldn't it track logically that if your number one cause, if the thing that was getting you out to the polls to vote for the next president of the United States, to vote in the next election, was the safety and well-being of children, wouldn't it logically track that you would care about gun violence, that you would care about sexual abuse in churches, that you would care about things that actually demonstrably affect children negatively? Wouldn't you be more concerned about conversion therapy leading to, you know, statistically higher rates of suicide in kids and teenagers? Wouldn't you be more concerned about that than drag shows, which to date have just led to zero kids being assaulted or attacked and seem to not lead to many kids committing suicide? Wouldn't you be more concerned about that logically, reasonably, rationally, if that was your concern? If your big thing was the safety and well-being of children at all costs in any context? And that's why it's just like, it's so fucking transparent that the real beef, of course, shocker to literally no one listening to the sound of my voice right now, the real beef that they have is kids being exposed to queer people and queer culture and queerness in general. They don't like it. And it's so, what's really interesting is that, like, what we see is that on some level, and I don't think it's conscious, I think it's subconscious, on some level they know that that's a shitty position to have. They know that just coming out and saying, I don't want gay people around my kids, I don't want trans people around my kids because I think they're icky and gross, they know on some level that they're maybe not even able to confront. They're aware on some level that that's not a great look, that that's a bad look, that that makes them look bigoted and prejudiced. And I think they're also aware on some level that saying that they care about kids but not really caring about gun violence or sexual abuse at church and things like that makes them look hypocritical and strains their credibility. I think somewhere in there they're aware of it. Otherwise, they wouldn't be doing the charade. Otherwise, I don't think we would be seeing all of the mental gymnastics and the effort to be so intellectually dishonest. To be like, no, 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 no. This isn't about my prejudicial beliefs toward queer people. This is just about me thinking that it's inappropriate for kids to be looking at sexually suggestive dancing. That's what it's about. And I really think that a lot of these people actually convince themselves that that's what it is. I really think that they convince themselves like, no, I don't think that kids should be looking at adult-themed, sexually suggestive or explicit dancing. And I don't think that that's an unreasonable thing to suggest. Again, showing that they have no idea what the hell drag story hour is. Someone shows them like a clip from a drag show at a 21 and older venue where like something suggestive is happening. And they're like, this is what's going on in front of our kids. And it's like, no, a drag queen in a dress is reading a story to kids with their parents present in the room. That's what's happening. It's like people hiring like a clown or a magician or someone dressed as a Disney princess for a kid's birthday party. It's just that. It's an adult playing dress up and coming out and doing like a little show for the kids. That's what it is. It's just that, you know? But because it's uncomfortable for people like this to admit to themselves and admit to other people and acknowledge openly, I think I'm just a bigot. I think I have selective outrage when it comes to queer people and their vicinity to my kids or to kids in general. I just don't like gay people, bisexual people, pansexual people, asexual people. I don't like transgender people. I don't like non-binary people. Since that's a hard thing to just say and be intellectually honest about, what's a lot easier to swallow for them, what's a lot easier to stomach for them when it comes to their own self-image is, no, I just care about kids. I don't think kids should be exposed to non-age appropriate content. And I don't really care about the context. In any context, I'm not for that. And I think they actually convince themselves of that. But they have to do that because on some level, they know that the honest approach means that they have to confront the fact that, like, they're prejudiced, that they have bias, that they have bigoted tendencies and beliefs, and they can't do it. So, oh, it's kids. It's kids. I don't think kids should be exposed to sexually explicit imagery. So when you show them something like cheerleaders at a sporting event, scantily clad and doing sexually suggestive dances in front of kids and families, and you say, what about this? And it's like, the microchip in their brain fries, and it's like, well, and some of them will say this, they'll go like, well, I think that that's bad too. And it's like, okay, why aren't you talking about that then? How come we haven't seen you protesting outside of sporting events? How come you're not trying to push your lawmakers to introduce bills of legislation that outlaw kids being able to go to sporting events or ban cheerleaders from sporting events? How come you're not trying to outlaw child beauty pageants? How come you're not trying to outlaw, kids being able to see rated R movies? Why aren't you doing that? Why are we only seeing your outrage when it comes to drag shows? And the answer is obvious. It's so clear and so transparent. That is sort of the difficulty. That's sort of the challenge in confronting these people I found, is that many of them have convinced themselves that they have a more reasonable position. Look, I just don't think that babies should be murdered. That's a reasonable position. That's reasonable. And if I can convince myself of that, that that's my stance, is I'm not, it's not that, I don't really care what doctors say about abortion being a part of healthcare and potentially saving a pregnant person's life when, an abortion might be a life-saving necessary procedure. I just don't believe in murdering babies, infants. And that to me seems like a reasonable position. So what's difficult about confronting these ideologies is that a lot of these people have convinced themselves of it, but they are being, whether they're aware of it or not, intellectually dishonest, because that's not the actual debate when it comes to abortion. The debate isn't, are you pro-murdering babies or anti-murdering babies? The debate is, do you understand why abortion is a necessary part of healthcare or not? Do you understand why 9 out of 10 doctors recommend that abortion should be legal and that safe, legal access to abortion should exist? Do you understand that or not? They disingenuously reframe everything. Oh, well, the Democrats are secret pedophiles who have secret pedophile rings, in the basements of pizza parlors. So if you're pro-Democratic Party, you're pro-pedophilia, because Donald Trump has said multiple times that he's coming after the pedophiles, that he's going to take them down. No Democrat candidate has talked about that. So again, convincing yourself you have a reasonable position here. Well, I'm anti-pedophile. Yet the choice between these two parties or these two options isn't, are you pro-pedophile or anti-pedophile? Also, by the way, like, actual evidence doesn't support that the Republican Party is the anti-pedophile party. The actual, like, numbers of how many sitting members of Congress and people holding office for the Republican Party actually have been accused credibly of sex crimes, it's just, like, way more people on the right than on the left. You've got Matt Gaetz, who is just like a sitting member of Congress who full on is a human trafficker, who, like, we have Venmo receipts of him, like, paying for people by name, being like, send Melissa over here for this much money. Thank you. And there it is. It's not some secret thing happening in the basement of a pizza parlor. It's just a real thing happening in real time on a weekend in Florida with Matt Gaetz. Yeah, no one's voting left because they're pro pedophile. That's not an intellectually honest way to frame the conversation. It wouldn't be intellectually honest of me to say that anyone who votes Republican is doing so because they're pro pedophile secretly. That's not a realistic thing. So suggesting that if you support drag performers and you support drag, that means that you support sexualizing kids and exposing kids to sexualized material, that's what you're for. That's not an intellectually serious or intellectually honest way to frame that conversation. You're not being serious. You're not being honest, and on some level you know it. Because we're not actually talking about the safety of children. If we were, all the other things that I've already mentioned, we'd be talking about all those. We'd be talking about cheerleaders and child beauty pageants and sexual abuse at church. We'd be talking about all that stuff too. But we're not. We're just talking about drag shows because it's a situation that allows conservative people to craft a narrative that vilifies queer people. It's just, it's so frustrating so often that we can't just say what's actually happening. That we can't just talk, we can't just have the conversation in an open, honest way. I don't want drag shows happening in my community. Why don't you want drag shows happening in your community? Because I don't like gay people, and typically it's gay people who do drag, and they do it at gay clubs. And I think that being gay, being bisexual, being trans, being non-binary, you know, identifying as part of the queer community, I believe that that's evil and immoral. That's all I really want is just to be able to have the conversation like that. Just to be able to have it in an honest way. I don't think that we should address the problem of gun violence in schools. Why don't you think that we should try to address the problem of gun violence in schools? Because I think it's more important that I have the right to own whatever gun I want than it is that we try to make gun ownership safer, that we put more restrictions on it, and that we have, you know, more laws surrounding it that make it harder for dangerous people to get guns. I think it's more important that I have the freedom to own a gun than it is to make sure that we are crafting our laws in a way that keep kids in schools safer. Let's just have the conversation in a real way. What you value is your freedom to own the firearms that you want to own, unrestricted. You don't want the law getting involved in that. You don't want the government getting involved in that. Let's have the conversation in an honest way, please. That's what you value. You value that above the death toll of kids in schools. And that is intellectually honest. That's what's real. But framing it like that, it's hard. It's hard for people to say that. It's hard to be real about that. So, I mean, that's just a conversation they prefer not to have. Anyway, that's not really what we're talking about today. I wanted to start off with that because that's what's on my mind. But we're talking about something completely different. It's a lot lighter on the show today, all right? It's not super heavy. I feel like I've got a lot of heavy topics that are being covered in my video content lately, in my short videos on TikTok and Instagram. And lately on the podcast, I've just been wanting to kind of like have some guests on where I can just talk about something else that I just like, something else I find interesting. So today I'm having one of the internet's foremost dating commenters. It's one of my favorite people. I love this creator. I love her content. I love the way that she talks about dating in the dating world, in the modern dating world, in the digital landscape. I love her commentary on dating apps and like what it's like just dating men and how awful men can be in that space. I've been following her for a few years now, and I've always been a fan. I've really enjoyed her content for a long time now. I was really thrilled to get her on the podcast. Her name is Amelia Sampson. I'm thrilled to have her here. We're talking about dating apps and just about the ups and downs and the ins and outs and all arounds of dating in the modern age, of dating in the internet age. She gets a little soft launch out of me in this episode. Spoiler warning. Spoiler alert. She gets a little soft launch. For those of you who don't know what a soft launch is, I'm going to tell you really quick and then we're going to start the episode. A soft launch is when someone is like seeing someone. It can be for a job or a lot of things, but people usually refer to it in the context of relationships. And since Amelia and I are talking about dating, a thing that people will do in the social media age is when they are seeing someone and it's starting to get more serious and they're starting to date exclusively and they're starting to move toward being in a relationship. Sometimes before the relationship is really like solidified and they're like 5 or 6 months into it and they've said, I love you to each other, and they're like really a couple and a partnership and they're really doing it. Sometimes people, because they want everyone on the internet to know that like something's brewing, something exciting is going on, but they're not quite ready to like post a couple photo yet, a photo of them as a couple. People will do a little soft launch. So soft launches take the form of posting the person that you're seeing to your Instagram story, maybe, but like not tagging them. So it's just like a photo of this one person, and then everyone on the internet's like, who's that? Who is that? Why are you showing us this photo of this person? And it's only on the story, so it only lasts for a day. So it's soft launch. Or you do a thing where like you're out to dinner with somebody and you're taking a picture of like the drink that they ordered or the dish that they ordered, and you can see from like the neck down that person, and maybe you tag them in the thing, and then everyone goes like, who's this mystery person whose face we're not seeing? Soft launch. That's a soft launch, okay? Hard launch would be a post to the main account, a photo of you and your significant other holding hands, kissing, arms around each other, whatever, with some caption of like, oh my God, this human, I love them so much. I'm so happy to have them, so grateful to have you in my life, BB. That's a hard launch. That is, boom, we're here. We're announcing it to the world. Amelia, spoiler, gets a little sneaky soft launch out of me in this conversation that I was not thinking was going to come out of me, but it did. So keep your ears peeled for that little soft launch. Let's get into this conversation, shall we? Here we go. From a Blanket Fort recording studio in a one-bedroom apartment in North Hollywood, this is People Pleaser. I'm Austin Archer, and today I'm talking with my friend Amelia Sampson about dating apps. Anyway, the end of my story that I was telling you is Justin Timberlake said his back hurt at my age. And that just made me feel better, because I was like, well, he's like a dancer and he's athletic and he's handsome. And if his back hurts, then it's okay that my back hurts.
Yeah, no, for sure. I've started to throw my back out when I like sneeze wrong, or like I was walking downstairs and stepped off the last stair wrong, threw out my back. It's just like, I don't think I'm like out of shape. I think that this is just something that happens. People just fall apart.
Yeah, I think so too. I think it's just one of those things that happens. You're on the 150th episode. Does that mean anything? Is that a thing? Do I have to wait till 200 before it's significant? But this is 150.
I feel like any sort of interval, you know, like I would say any like interval of 25 feels significant.
Yeah. To me, it's like it has to be an even number, and it has to, because even feels like rounder somehow, or like, but you're saying 25. I could do 125 and that would be a thing.
I feel like 25, 50, 75. I feel like all of those hold weight, but I don't like, I always have to have like the oven at like an interval of 25. I think it's just a me thing, but
okay.
It feels like a big deal, but 150, that's like a good number. I'm honored.
Yeah, that's halfway to 300.
That's a fact.
So, you know, not bad.
Not bad.
Yeah. I don't know if it means anything, and we're not really doing anything. There's not going to be like balloons or confetti or something, but you're here. What's that sign say behind you?
It says God is a woman.
With an X.
With an X.
Good.
Hell yeah. But I also have the hand of God. I'm going to try not to piss off my computer. Yeah, because it was originally our backdrop for my podcast, which was like kind of had like a sacrilegious kind of vibe to it. And we don't record here anymore. So now it's just the backdrop for myself. But one of my college roommates bought me this recently.
Oh, sick.
Yeah. So yeah. Nice.
I have a little neon sign in my studio that says The Blanket Fort, because my studio is called The Blanket Fort. And so when the guest sits over there, and when I have a guest in the studio, you can see it. But
it's like you have like a custom neon sign.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You got?
I went and had that made. your podcast, The Holy Hour, and it is sort of sacrilege because it's spelled H-O-E, like being a hoe.
Being a hoe, yes. Yeah. Yep. That's my podcast. I co-host it with one of my best friends, Liz. We are on episode 127, so not quite where you're at, but we've been for almost 3 years. It'll be 3 years in June. We started right in the middle of the pandemic. And it's just been amazing. We got picked up by a network kind of recently. It's been good. And it just so happened to kind of like come together with my my TikTok presence too. It came podcast and then TikTok. So having it all kind of intersect was interesting.
What network did you get picked up by?
It's called Blue Wire.
Wow.
They were originally all sports, but they were like, how their Barstool that would give opportunities to people that wouldn't like normally get opportunities to host a sports podcast. We really loved that mission. They ended up expanding into lifestyle. So we were one of their first lifestyle podcasts that they brought on, and they're fantastic. They're so supportive and great.
Well, congratulations. That's awesome.
Thanks. Thank you. We were super excited.
That's really, really cool. So I want to talk a little bit about like what, like you're like the internet's like go-to, one of their favorite go-to commentators, at least you're one of mine. Like you've been one of mine for a few years now. Like I've been following you for a while and I've been a fan for a while of just your commentary and the way that you break down sort of the era of digital dating and dating apps and all of that stuff. How did that become your niche? Was that a goal? Did you set out to be like a commentator on that space, or did it sort of just like happen that way where you were like, oh, these are the videos that people are responding to. This is the content that people are responding to. Like, I guess, how'd you get into making content and how did that become sort of the direction that you wound up going?
Yeah. Well, first of all, thank you for saying that. I'm one of your favorites because I think so, so highly of you. Every time I see anything that you post, I'm just like will stop scrolling because it's always gold. And then whenever I see that you like anything that I post, it like sustains me for a week. So I really truly appreciate it. How I got started in this has been kind of like a weird windy road. I've always wanted to make people laugh. Like that's always been my goal. I was on YouTube in like 2008, just like making the most embarrassing videos ever. I've privated all of them, so don't go looking.
Are you a theater kid? You posted a video recently where you were like, it was the trend that people are doing where it was like, I wish I would have known you earlier. And then it's like me earlier. And I was like, that's a theater kid. Are you a theater kid?
Yep. Were you?
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah. We have like a fine tuned nose to sniff out other theater kids. I was a theater kid. So my YouTube presence was cringy. But that's like, I just have always loved making people laugh. When I was little, I would like tell jokes that didn't make sense. So when Vine popped up, I tried my hand on Vine. Obviously it went away before like I ever got an opportunity to actually like do anything worthwhile on there. So when TikTok came around, I just started like making videos that like I thought was funny. I wasn't getting any traction. And then I went through like a really bad breakup. And I started of 8 years. It was an 8-year relationship. Nope. And yeah, rough. And I started journaling, like video journaling, healing from it, because all I wanted to see was like chapters of someone feeling better. I was like, if I could just see that like in a few months, I'm not going to feel this awful, then that would be helpful. And I couldn't find it anywhere. So I was like, I'll do it. And it blew up. And I was like, guess I had to keep doing this. But as time went on, I kind of plateaued on my healing. So I transitioned into like what it was like getting back into dating and started noticing like all of these patterns with how I only date men. So it was like how men speak on dating apps, and those videos started to get popular, and I started showing like screenshots of different things that I was seeing, but then I got banned off of Hinge for doing that, I think. I think I got banned for bullying, I think is why I got kicked off of Hinge.
So they were anonymous, right?
They were, but I feel like I had linked my Instagram to my Hinge profile, so I think they were popping up, so people were, like, reporting me for bullying. Mm. Like, whatever. It's not bullying. There's, like, mean people. And so people
don't
started...
Don't you love when you get... when you get taken down for bullying bullies, like when there's like a guy being like really gross, like be like someone saying like something really like objectively terrible, like misogynistic, racist, whatever. And then you like call them out for it. And people are like, you can't do that. You can't yeah. bully them.
Yeah. It's disgusting. I feel like TikTok really like has made it clear who they side with way too often.
Oh yeah.
And I recognize that it's like robots are running a lot of the platform, but it's awful. Like the things that people get away with saying. And then if I try to stand up for someone, it's like, you can't, don't do that. I got taken down for hate speech for yelling at someone for making fun of pronouns, hate speech of protected groups. I'm like, is the protected group like idiots? Is that the protected group? But anyway, so then people started sending me screenshots and it's kind of turned into this thing that I have now. So I get like 30 screenshots a day from people of dating profiles that they're stumbling across. And it's just an endless stream of shit. Am I allowed to curse on your podcast?
Fuck yeah. unsurprisingly, there's no shortage of like men behaving badly on dating app content. So if, like, people in your audience are just like, oh, we just got it. We got receipts for days of like men being monsters in the digital dating world.
Yeah. It's truly endless. And what's interesting is I get a lot of screenshots where I don't know the gender of the person that it's coming from, but everybody assumes that it's men. So I've become really popular on like Red Pill Reddit and like different just like men's rights activist pages.
Oh, lucky you.
Yeah, it's been great. I get mass reported pretty consistently. But it's good. If I'm pissing off that group of people, then I'm doing something right. I don't want them to like me.
God, that is frustrating though, right? Because yeah, that whole like you're bullying a protected class of people and it's like apparently straight white male bigots are protected, I guess, by TikTok at least. But yeah, it is frustrating to be like, I'm literally doing the opposite of hate speech. I'm literally like calling out hate speech. Yeah. I'm criticizing hate speech. I'm criticizing hateful behavior. And that's against the rules now on TikTok. And it's definitely against the rules on Twitter. Twitter is a fucking nightmare. It was always bad. And now it's just like, they're really emboldened.
It's really bad. How do you get around? I know I'm going to start interviewing you now. Like, how do you get around it? Your whole thing is taking down bigots. Do you get banned a lot?
All the time. I don't get around it. I get videos taken down all the time. And in the time that I've been on TikTok, I've probably had about 50 or 60 videos taken down for community guidelines violations. And I've appealed all of them and I've won every single appeal that I've ever done. And because it was never correct, it was always just like, no, that's not correct. There's no hate speech in this video. I'm not bullying anybody. And I've won all the appeals, but every time I get a new video taken down, I get a warning from TikTok that's like, hey, you're doing this too much. We're going to take your account away if you do it again. And they show me the list of videos every time. They're like, look, you can see the list of videos that you've committed guidelines violations in. And I'm like, I appealed every one of those and I won every one of those. So they have this just like really bad software that's like, hey, if I win the appeal, that means that I didn't commit the violation, which means you shouldn't have it on a list of like evidence of me breaking your rules a bunch. Like, I actually haven't broken your rules ever. Yeah. I've been incorrectly reported for breaking your rules a lot, but like I've never actually broken your rules. And somehow I still have an account. Somehow they've never actually taken my account away. But it is frustrating every time that they take a video down. It's
no kidding. This platform grew way too quickly. Like, they were not prepared for what it turned into, because really you would think the technology would be ahead of the game. I've been banned twice. The first time my account got banned was like devastating because I didn't know that that was just something that happens. And like all this work that I've put into this thing is now just like gone because people were like, you know, closed-minded people were offended that I was calling them out. And that's just like an awful thing to feel like they're winning. But it's good that you haven't been banned because it's like a really, really horrible feeling.
Well, and then like the fact that the government's just like constantly trying to get rid of the platform too. It's like, hey, I hate TikTok. I'll be straight. I don't hide my feelings about it. Like it drives me nuts. It is the platform that changed my life and that allowed me to do this as a job. So there's always going to be that, but I am so frustrated with it. Just in the way that it operates and its content moderation process. And I'm not shy about talking about it and talking about the fact that I feel like it's an absolute dumpster fire when it comes to just the organization and the company of TikTok, that it's like, you can't get in touch with anyone. It's not like Meta is a much better company. They're not. Like if your Instagram account gets hacked and stolen, it's basically just gone. Like Meta has no recourse for people who are just like, my account's gone, it was stolen. They're like, yeah, that happens sometimes, sorry. And it's just like, you can't be one of the biggest companies to ever exist in the history of the world and like have this piss poor of customer service. Like, and I get it that they're serving a lot of people, that it's they have a lot of customers, but it's like, you've got to figure this out somehow. You've got to figure out a way to get, especially creators who have a significant following and a significant audience size on there. Like, we have to have some kind of like, and this might sound elitist or classist, but it's literally because our livelihoods are attached to it, because it's how we make our money. It's how, it's literally like our career. It's like, I gotta have some kind of preferential front of the line, like front of the queue. If I've got a problem, I should have someone I can talk to at the company and be like, I'm making money for you guys and for myself, and we should have a relationship here rather than just hope your account doesn't get banned.
It's truly like a really messed up kind of transactional relationship where like they know that they're going to keep us on, and they don't make it easy at all for us to move our audience off of the platform too. Like I have tried so many different like code words to try to get people to click the link in my bio. And I get like, not even kidding, like 1/16th of the views on that video as opposed to other ones because of me trying to bring people off the platform. It's sad. It's like, if you want to keep us on here, then like you probably should put a little bit more effort into wanting, like making us want to stay, but they just don't have any sort of incentive.
Yeah. It's like, it's like the only thing that's guaranteed for me as a content creator on TikTok. Like, I don't know how any video is going to do ever. I never know. That's just the algorithm. Like, I don't know when a video is going to go viral, when it's going to be a total flop, when it's going to be in between. I never know. The only thing I know for sure is if I'm talking about my music or my podcast or some other place that I would like people to check out, my YouTube channel, something like that, that is the only guarantee that that video is not going to perform.
Yeah.
Like it's,
It's awful. It's awful.
It's very frustrating. It feels, Yeah. Anyway, that's not what we're talking about today, but that is
go on and on.
Oh God. Every time I have a content creator on the podcast, we talk about it for at least a little bit. I got to get like, I got to get a little bit of complaining out of the way about this thing where it's like, hey, we're lucky to have the thing. We're lucky to have an audience to listen to our thoughts. That's really cool. But these platforms are really, really frustrating to have your life tied to and your career tied to.
It's like a full-time job trying to get around it just in itself. But
yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah. So that's how you got into it. That's how you sort of found the niche of being a person who talks about digital dating and online dating. Are you currently on any dating apps? You talked about getting banned from Hinge. Are you currently doing dating apps, or is that a thing that's no longer necessary in your situation? What's the current situation?
Yeah.
Or are you at liberty to say?
That's a hard-hitting question, Austin. Yeah. No, I am still. So I used my my mom's phone number to re-download my my Hinge account. She was like, am I an accessory to a crime? No, it's okay. But yeah, no, I'm still on the dating apps. It's a little scary because people have started to recognize me on the apps. And so I feel like I have to keep my stuff like polished, because if there's anything that anyone can tear apart on there, they're going to. But yeah, no, I'm still on there. I don't really date as hard as I used to just because I'm so busy now. But when I first started dating, when I was like getting over this breakup, I was dating like five people at a time. I was like, I hit the ground running, and that's exhausting and not super fun. I don't know if you're dating, but like first dates are the worst thing in the world. So I've like tried to dial back that, because it was like, you know, shaving some years off of my life. But I'm still on the apps, just kind of just dipping my toes in right now.
Yeah, I was actually going to ask you about whether or not people ever recognize you on the apps, because that was a thing when I was doing the apps that was like, I think at first I thought it was cool because it meant that like they have a pre-existing context for who I am. At first I was like, oh, that's good. That means that like you've looked at my face a lot and you've watched me talking and you've definitely heard some of my opinions. And you're okay with that enough to like want to go out with me. So that's nice. But then I kept running into this problem where when I would go out with people who knew me from the internet, that like they had all of this context on me that I didn't have on them. And I wonder if you've run into that where you're like, oh, you have like a pre-existing notion of who I am before I even get a chance to know you. Have you run into that at all?
Yes. The first time that I had cried on TikTok since my breakup was when I had gone out with someone that knew me from the internet that I really, really liked. And he ended up just like cutting things off with me. And I had this like big realization about like, whenever I date anyone that has an idea of who I am, I either like disappoint them because I'm not who they think I'm going to be, or I disappoint them because I'm exactly who they think I'm going to be. And so like, I don't know which one it is, because like, how I am online is exactly how I am in person, but it does feel like I'm disappointing them in some way. And so I've started to put like boundaries up for myself. I try not to date anyone that knows me from the internet. I stumbled across someone's profile that was like, I just don't want to end up on the choose a different prompt girls TikTok, which is like my like one tagline. And I matched with him and I was like, I just had to like, this is the best thing I've ever seen on on a date. This is the best thing I've ever come across. And he was like, oh, well, do you want to like go out? Do you want to hang out? And it sucks, because it's just like, I've made this promise to myself where I'm just like, I want us to start off on an even playing field. I want to both know nothing about each other. So whenever I match with a guy on the apps that like isn't big on social media, like they don't use social media a lot, that's usually who I've realized I'm gravitating toward. Because it really is like a weird kind of foot to start off on.
Yeah, it is. I think so when I started, you know, building an audience on TikTok, I was in a relationship, and I remember sort of the experience of being in a relationship, but like having women like DM me and like slip into my DMs and being like, oh man, if I was single, like I could be out there cleaning up. Like I got women, like this doesn't happen as a man. Like women don't come to you. But since they're like, I like that you're saying things that are supportive of me, and you know, being very forward in my DMs, very forward. And then when I was single, I was like, oh, I'm gonna fucking go out there and kill it. I'm gonna like, this is gonna be the best single time of my life. And really quickly I was like, I don't actually think that seeing people that know me from the internet is a good strategy.
No. The power dynamic aspect of it is just kind of like icky feeling. Like it just like, not that I feel like I like have any sort of power over them, but like it does kind of feel like they have me on this like pedestal to start out with. And that's like, I don't like it. Like I don't know. It's just like a gross feeling. Are you allowed, or can I ask you, are you dating someone right now?
Oh my God, Amelia.
That's nice.
You know, I like.
I'm so sorry. Have I made you need a safe
word? I'll say this. I'll say I don't have any dating apps on my phone right now.
Got
and
it.
There's a reason why I don't have any dating apps on my phone right now.
How were the dating apps for you? Were they successful?
They were. So it was I didn't expect that either. I downloaded and deleted and downloaded and deleted at least 4 times over the last year and change because I just was like, no, I hate this. Every time I would download it, the first thought I would have is, see, Austin, look, there's so many possibilities. There's just a world of possibilities. Look how many people there are out there. There's so many attractive, available, cool women in Los Angeles. And then like after a week of that, I'd be like, there's too many attractive, available women in and I hate it. And it's too many people and there's too many conversations and I'm letting all these people down. And now I've got a queue of like 30 people that I'm supposed to be talking to. And if I stop talking, I'm a jerk. I'm ghosting. I'm mass ghosting people every time I get interested in one person. And it gets really, really complicated really quick. You can start off being like, oh, this is so cool. I have my pick of the, like, there's all these people, there's all these possibilities. And then really quickly you're like, I can't set up dates with all of these people. Yeah.
Right. No, I know. The choice fatigue is a real, real thing. It's tough because like you are relying on these people representing themselves in an honest way in such a like a small amount of real estate that like you could be swiping past like your soulmate, if you believe in that. Like you could be swiping past someone because they didn't represent themselves well. And I had this realization, I went on a date with a guy recently that I didn't meet on dating apps. And I don't think that I would have swiped right on him if I saw him on dating apps. Like he just like physically wasn't who I like normally see myself going for. And it was a fantastic date. He's so fun. And he sent me his dating app. And I'm just like, I just don't think I would have said yes to you based on this. So it's like, we're having to rely on, you know, like the self-reporting that people do on their dating profile to find who we're supposed to date. It's just an unnatural way to do it. So whenever there's like, you know, a success story, like I'm like, how did you guys meet? They're like, oh, Tinder, Matt. It's like, that's incredible to me. Like, oh, it worked.
Hey, look, it's early days for me in the situation that I'm in, but like this is the first time I've ever had a successful thing. But again, going back, like this person did not know me from the internet. And I do think, and she doesn't even give a shit about it. And I do think that now that she knows me better, I think that if she had known me from the internet, she would not have, I don't think that it's like her style. So it's she doesn't give a shit. She's like, I'm happy you got a thing and that's cool. And like, I'm glad that you stand up for the things that you stand up for, but like, she doesn't give a shit. And like, she's not a fan. Not that she doesn't like it. I'm saying that she's like not a, she's not like a fan girl, you know, like it's not that. And I think that if she had known me, she would have been like, nah, you know? And so there's sort of that element of, that's really interesting that you went on a date with a person that you didn't meet from the apps, because I think that the algorithm of these apps sometimes too, it's like, there's a chance that we might be tailoring a bit too much, that we're like custom designing the perfect person that we want to date in our minds. And sometimes what winds up working in reality is someone that you wouldn't necessarily have drawn up I don't know. What's your process like when swiping on apps?
I've realized as I've gotten older, like how, and I think this is something that happens to a lot of people as they get older, is like looks matter so much less as you get older. But like, again, like when you have 5 pictures, 6 pictures and 3 answers to go off of on Hinge specifically, like you have more of a view of what they look like than of their personality, especially because, and this is like a big thing that I talk about on my videos, is like, the way that people answer these prompts is embarrassing. And it's like not a good way to like, it's just, it's not a good representation of them. So I've realized like, and this goes back to this guy that I went out with that isn't somebody that I would have like swiped right on. Like I've been swiping right on people that like fit this like visual representation of like who I think that I'm going to end up with, because nobody's filling out the answers, and that blows. And that's been like leading me to not having successful dates, because personality matters so much more to me than looks at this point in my life. And I'm not getting a read of anybody's personality because nobody's putting any effort into their dating profile. So like whenever I see like a really, really well, like a good sense of humor, like really good answers, if they like have a prompt filled out that like opens up a conversation in some way, I'm like almost always going to send them a like, because it's just like so refreshing to just like get like a crumb of personality out of people on these apps.
Can I tell you what my favorite bit was? This is an old standing bit. I did this back when I was in dating apps in like 2015. And ooh. I did this in the most recent run too. And I was like really proud of this bit. My bio on like Tinder and Bumble would just be the plot line to the movie Happy Gilmore. So it would just be like a hockey player who found out that he was good at golf, enters the PGA Tour to win his grandma's house back from Shooter McGavin. And then like, you know, the right people would swipe on me and be like,
yes. Absolutely. Okay, so this is what I say though. Whenever people are commenting on my videos and they're like, oh, can you like show us a good profile for once so like we can see like what we should do? I always say, just like, if you do something like that, like a Happy Gilmore log line, and like that's your sense of humor, then like you're going to attract exactly who you're supposed to. Like all of these like close-minded bigots that I post are going to either end up alone or they're going to find who they should. And that's great at the end of the day. It's like, it's good that people are showing their red flags like so out there, so you don't have to find out down the line. So I like, you know, I shit on these guys, but it's like, and they deserve it. But like, at the end of the day, I am really glad that they're, you know, putting it all out there, because they're going to end up with who they're supposed to end up with. You end up with who you're supposed to end up with, because like you show something that like is like a symbol of like your sense of humor and your personality. And that's really like all that we can do on these apps.
That's a really good point, that like these guys that are like, hey, look, listen, I want you to be these dimensions, and I want, you know, like, yeah. Like, so, and there are women that do that too, that are like six figures, over 6 feet tall, like the, you know, like, I think they call it like the 666 thing, that like you need to have like at least 6 inches, over 6 feet tall, six figures, like this whole thing that, you know, and I'm like, 6 inches, that's not like, that's normal. That's, yeah. That's, yeah. You gotta just have normal dick, you know, but just normal dick. That's that. But like, but I do think that in a way, and these people are easy to criticize, but in a way they are being very honest about the kind of person that they are and the kind of thing that they're looking for. And that it's right. Like, okay, well then you won't accidentally wind up on a date with me. So yeah. Great.
Totally. You know? And that's a comment that I get a lot on my videos. They're like, I'm so grateful that he like put it all out there. And it's like, yeah, that's not what I'm saying by calling them out. I just think that they deserve to be shamed. Like, to be so like close-minded and awful and be like, no fatties. That's one that I see a lot. And it's like, these women don't want to be with you. Like, don't worry about it. They are not interested in you either. Like, it's just this disgusting kind of way of conducting yourself where you act like everybody is lining up to be with you. And like, I have to lay out exactly what I don't want. Just swipe left on people that you aren't interested in and you won't match with them. You don't need to be you don't need to be an asshole about it.
So absolutely. Yeah. And so I wanted to ask you about your process too, because your process sounds to me like the process that a lot of my like women friends described to me as well. When I asked them like, what do you do on dating apps? And like you said, like the older I get, the less looks are important and stuff. And it's more about what's the answer, like trying to get a feel for who this guy is as a person. What's his personality? Do I think we would get along if we hung out together? I'm sure that you know this. And again, I'm going to speak in very generalized terms, because that's obviously not the process that like every woman has on dating apps. And this is not the process that every man has. But I'm sure that you know this, but like in generalized terms, that's not the way that men swipe on dating apps. Yeah. You know, for men, it very much is. For a lot of men, and this is very generalized, but for a lot of men, it is smash or pass. It's, could I do the deed with this person?
And then
I'll see if we like each other beyond that. Like, I'll see if like we can get along. But it is, I think for a lot of men still, it's just sort of like a very quick surface level, like, I'm attracted. I'm physically attracted, you know?
Totally.
And that can, and I think what winds up happening, I think there's this psychological thing that I know has happened to me as a man, where like what you see is by swiping on just anyone that you're physically attracted to is like, okay, what I'm, the data I'm receiving from the online world is that I'm pulling like 2%. Like just the vast majority of people that I swipe on are saying no to me, which means that out in the real world, most people aren't attracted to me in the same way that I'm attracted to them. And I think that this is causing maybe potentially some psychological stress. But then to the same tune, a lot of women are out there going like, I have to be very selective and very careful, because most of the time when I swipe on someone, it's a match. Would you say that that was your experience, that it was like probably 70 to 80% of the time that you're deciding to match with someone that you're getting a match?
Yeah, you know what's interesting is, I don't know if you've recently left the apps. I'll just say, I'll word it like that. Mm-hmm. You were around Hinge when roses were introduced.
Yeah.
Standouts. I've realized whenever I send anyone a rose, it's never a match, ever, ever. And other than that, it's almost always a match. And I think that that's interesting. But I don't know if it's like a, like, it's a little too like overeager for them, but who knows? Regardless, I think like the idea of safety is like exactly what it is. It's, we hear a lot of stories about, not a lot, but too many, of women getting killed from like on a Tinder date. And if we can like glean from a profile that this person is unsafe, that's so much more important than like if they're hot. If I see, there are so many dudes that I've come across where I'm just like, hell, like I would. And then I read the kinds of things that they say and it's like, oh, nope, there it is. Like, I would not feel safe being around this person. Some dudes, you'll match with them and they'll be like, do you want to have like a work from home day? It's like, I don't know you. Like, I don't know you. And like that kind of like not understanding that that's like a scary situation for us is like the kind of like ignorance that I don't want to associate myself with too, because it's tough being a woman meeting strangers. Like it sucks. So yeah, it's like, I think for that reason, I'm a lot more selective with who I like say yes to. I've also realized like I've found myself matching with people and then like not wanting to talk to them like after we match, and I don't want to be that person that's like a match and then it's just like just never say anything to them when they message me. So I've started to be even more selective. Like if this person tries to have a conversation with me, am I going to want to engage? So it's taken me a lot longer to swipe through the apps now, because I'm like really like looking at everything. I've like got it down to a science. But you have to, because it's like it's unsafe. And Seattle, like, we like breed serial killers out here. So you can never be
sure. Men are terrifying. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I honestly don't like, every time I'm single, I really am like, it's a miracle that anyone will go out with me at all. Or will, like, cause I just am like, you really are taking such a big risk. Even if I am making efforts to appear in so many ways safe. I'm like, wouldn't I do that if I were trying to entrap you? Wouldn't I learn the language of, you know, the we've seen this story over and over again. The guy that's the nice guy that says everything right until he hears something that he doesn't want. Until the woman says, you know what? It's been lovely getting to know you, but I don't think I'd like this to continue any further. And then the real guy comes out. And it's like, oh, okay. Oh, so there you, oh my God, you're kind of a like sociopath. Like you're kind of a really, really scary person. And so I'm like, I know that I'm doing my best to present myself as safe and as a person who like I'm linking my social medias to be like, you can go check me out. Like my politics are all very like clear in there. And you know, I'm just kind of a goofball and I'm not like trying to sell myself as being hotter than I am. Like, I'm like, no, I look kind of like this. I'm kind of doofy and like that, you know, but I still am like, you're still taking a risk on coming to meet me. And I get, that's why I'm always like, let's just do a vibe check to meet up and then meet up in a neutral place where, you know, and give them a few chances to be like, see if you can detect any serial killer vibes. But even then I'm like, man, what a fucking scary thing, because
it's terrifying. It really, really is. And like, that's such a huge thing when I see men making such an effort to make sure I feel safe. The last dating app date that I went on, I messaged him. We were like chatting a little bit and I was like, what's your last name? So I can do like a little bit of like sleuthing. I'm sure you understand is what I said. And he was like, oh my God, absolutely. And like sent me all of his stuff. And I was just like, that is so, to not make a joke out of it, like, oh, what, you think I'm going to kill you? Like, it's like, yeah, I don't know you. Yes. So like, yeah, that's exactly why I'm asking. So like, whenever like, you know, anyone like you is like, come check out my, like, you know, here's my social media. Here's like, you can see like everything that you need to know about me here. It just is like such a huge, like, okay, all right. This is like, I can feel safe enough to like, you know, meet up with this person at like a coffee shop. So that really, really goes a long way. I think people that like hate on people that are like, oh, you're just trying to get Instagram followers here. That's why you like drop your handle. It's like, sure, maybe there's some people that do that. But I think at the end of the day, that's, you know, another little like gut check that we can do. And I think that that's cool when people open the door for that.
Well, so that was a problem for me too. So I actually had to eventually take away my linked social, like my linked Instagram and stuff, just because I was like, that was a thing where I was like, I'm willing to give it to them once I've talked to them and be like, hey, you can check this out.
Yeah,
if they ask me what I do, I'm like, it's this. And then I'm like, but I just, I'm like, there was a weird vibe thing where I was like, I don't want it to look like I'm like, look at this. Look. Oh, did you know that I'm quite popular over here? Like, it's like, it just feels.
Yeah.
But then I'm like, I want you to know what I do and who I am. And then that you get into that weird territory of like people who already know you and stuff, where like part of me was like, okay, I guess that means that you're aware that I seem safe.
Yeah.
But then also we have this weird dichotomy going on where like, or this weird dynamic where you have an idea of what going on a date with me would look like and I don't know you.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, there's it's a weird world that we're living in right now. So it's like everyone's trying to figure it out, and I think that it's easy to like, not easy, it's, there are ways to figure out, you know, like who's actually putting in an effort to like make sure that you feel safe, because nobody really knows like the ways to go about this. Everybody is different. Everyone needs to be communicated with differently. Everyone has different expectations and like coming into relationships with different like baggage and like skeletons in the closet. So I don't know, just one, like having the patience to just make sure that you're like putting in that tiny, tiny extra step to make somebody feel safe is huge, especially when you're a good person. Obviously there are like, you know, some scary people out there that are like cosplaying as, you know, people that someone can feel safe around. But I do think that it goes a long way when just that little bit of effort's put in.
It's good advice to any male listeners who might be on the apps right now. It's just like understanding, if you don't understand already, that like that is the dynamic and that is the situation that your fellow men have put you in. It's that you need to make sure that you understand that men are dangerous. And that doesn't mean that you are. It just means that you need to be aware that that is how you are perceived and that there's a good reason why you are perceived that way. Yeah. I want to talk about some of the things that like maybe online dating and dating in the internet era, like the things that people criticize, and like really talk about like, are these bad things or are these just natural evolutions in how humans are doing things? So there's things like, you talked about like choice fatigue and just the fact that like, you know, just one generation ago, I mean, even just back in like the 1990s, just the way that people were meeting, it wasn't, I'm going to look at a curated profile of every person within a 2 mile radius of me and make specific decisions of who I'd like to go to coffee with and pick 30 of them to like chat with for a while. It wasn't like that. Like you had to meet someone at work or out at a bar or out with friends. And then even going further back, I think it was literally like people would just marry whoever was in their hometown that they had a crush on as a kid, because it was like, what am I going to spend the rest of my life going town to town looking for the perfect person? And obviously there are drawbacks to that too, because I think we had generations of people who were in 40 or 50 year long marriages with people that they were like constantly at odds with, but it was just sort of the way that they did things that like, you don't get divorced and you, so we've had generations of people who more or less settled for something that when they didn't maybe need to. So I guess I'm just like wondering, like, do you think that the abundance of choices offered by online dating is a problem because it creates that choice fatigue where people are just, because I definitely know there is that thing in my head constantly running now of like, but could I do slightly better?
Yeah.
But could I get it? Could I curate the stats just even a little bit more? Just the specs? Could I just, you know, I remember getting out of my last relationship. That was a big fear that I had. I kept having this running voice in my head that was like, what, you want something better than this? Like you, like I was the person who ended the relationship. And it was like, I kept having this shame voice in my head that was like, this person's great. What's wrong with you? Like you want something even better than this? And it, I don't know. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, totally. Yeah. We're in a unique kind of zone right now. I think like, I mean, there's a few pieces of this. I feel like that my friend Demeter calls this, like it's like an Amazon effect where like, you know, he uses the example of his vacuum. He's like, if you're using your vacuum and it's like not like working as well as it did yesterday, like the impulse is to just like go on Amazon and like buy a replacement vacuum rather than like getting into the vacuum and like seeing like, is there a blockage? Like, is there something that I can like easily fix? And that's kind of how these dating apps are. It's like, oh, well, like, you know, this like one thing is kind of like off. So like, I'm just going to like go find something else. When people used to like work at things differently, obviously like, you know, dating in the past came with a lot of its own issues. So like, I don't want to like go back there, but like just in terms of like actually working at fixing an issue instead of just like passing off on to the next thing, like regardless of if that's a relationship or just like you've been on a date with the person and it feels great for all of these reasons, but then it's like, you know, a little off, like they have like a weird laugh or something, yeah. You know what I mean? Like it's just made it way, way, way too easy to be like, okay, well, like this one thing is like a little uncomfy. So like, let's see if I can find something else. And I'm certain that people are passing up on people that are like perfect for them, like whatever that means, because of like all of these options that are at our fingertips. But I do think that the pendulum is starting to swing the other way where like people are pushing against dating apps because of like that, you know, like it's just like too much all the time. And like people are trying to find their perfect person and they're realizing that that doesn't actually exist. And so all of these expectations that they had for themselves are just kind of starting to like go down the toilet a little bit.
Yeah. And I I think that those criticisms are valid, because I do think that there is, and people pushing against dating apps, because I do think that there also is this element of like, well, now you've got sort of this pay to play model where it's like, the dating, you can use the dating app for free, but if you want extra swipes and extra opportunities to make, and if you want to be able to see who liked you and all these extra packages, you can get the VIP package, which is like $14 a month, and you can be a, and then the app has an incentive to keep you on the app. The algorithm of the app has an incentive to keep you putting coins in the slot machine. And so now it's a slot machine algorithm where like, it's not even necessarily designed anymore to help you find that person. It's designed to keep you in the hunt, to keep you looking for the next thing. And I think that that absolutely can be problematic. And I think that people can wind up losing a lot of time just continuing to pull the lever and continuing to next person up, next person up, next person up, and sort of being frozen and not able to like make a choice and move forward, you know?
Yeah. It's like, it's pretty pathetic. Like Hinge, their whole thing was like the app designed to be deleted, but then you could buy like 6 months at a time. And it's like, hang on, like you want me to stay on for half a year when you're designed to be deleted? Like that, it's kind of in conflict with itself.
Yeah. It's like, Hinge, I thought you were trying to get me to delete this app. So, yeah. In a year, like by a year and make sure that you've dated enough people and then, you know, and then maybe renew after that and we'll see where we go. And then eventually.
I know, it's sad. It's really, really sad. I mean, like we're, everything is, you know, like capitalism. Like everybody is like after the coin. And like, that's fine when you like realize what that is and not like play into it. Because buying 6 months of a dating app that is telling you that it's going to find you your soulmate like right away is like a really gross play.
Yeah.
It's awful.
Now here's my optimistic counter argument, because I think all of that is totally valid. The choice fatigue and just the idea that like the algorithm is designed to just keep you always thinking that you're one swipe away from finding the actual right fit. So just like keep looking and to keep you on the app longer to draw that out. I think that's all totally valid. But, and also the fact that like, it's kind of curated people's minds to always be looking for the littlest thing to write someone off. I don't like their laugh, or you know what? It was a great date, but she had this thing stuck in her teeth for the back half of the night. And I can't get that out of my head. And like, but it's like something that's like, that's totally workable. She's not always going to have that thing stuck in her tooth, you know, like just the next time you see her, she's going to have flossed hopefully. And she won't, you know, and like, you can also say something. You could be like, oh, you got a little seed. Like, that's not a reason, but people will do this like, I better keep going to look. My counter argument to that is when you're in that mindset where you are next person up, next person up, next person up, and always finding little things to write people off, the moment that you find someone and on an app and your brain is not instantly writing them off and you're actually enjoying spending time with them and they're not writing you off, the two of you all of a sudden have this feeling of like, oh, we might have just found something special.
Totally.
Because I write everybody off all the time for the pettiest shit, and I keep hanging out with you and I keep not writing you off. Like and there's something, you all of a sudden feel like you're back to that feeling of like, I truly have found something rare. Because back in the old fashioned way of just like, I'm just going to date whoever I meet at a bar.
Yeah.
That's sort of just like, I'll date whoever I meet and I'll make it work. I'll fucking make this vacuum cleaner work, even if it's like a totally shitty vacuum cleaner and I could find a better vacuum cleaner. I'm going to just keep taking it to the Hoover repair shop and like, I'm going to make it work no matter what. Whereas with this more curated model, people actually can have that potential of finding that needle in a haystack thing where it's like, you know how many fucking dates I went on where I found a reason to not like the person and to not want to date the person, and I can't find a reason to not like you. And that all of a sudden, and I'm saying that too because I'm in a little bit of a situation where that's happening, and it makes me feel like, okay, all right, that's real cute and that's real like romantic too, that like for whatever reason, and we don't even really, can't even really put our finger on it. Me and maybe we're just fucking sick of swiping. Who knows? But me and this person like can't find a reason to write each other off yet. And it makes it all of a sudden feel like, of all the people, of all the lovely people I swiped on and had chats with and had coffee with, for some reason, you were the one that I wanted to keep hanging out with, you know?
Yeah.
And then it has that rarefied special feeling again, you know? Yeah.
Absolutely. No, for sure. And that's what I always, whenever like, you know, anybody ends anything with me or like one of my friends gets dumped, it's, or like somebody doesn't want to see them for a second date. Like I always have to remind them and myself, it's like, there are so many things that go into why somebody wants to be with someone. And so much of it really boils down to chemistry, because like I've gone out with this dude, his nickname is Music Man on my podcast. He's been like a staple, like the entire, like, two and a half years we've been doing this, because like he had all of these things that, like, you know, I would like go to his house and like his sink would be full of plates, and like if I wasn't super into someone, I'd be like, can you, like, you're about to have a girl over, can you like clean up a little bit? Like with him, I was like, oh, like I was like making excuses for it. I was like, he's too busy because he like does so much, so he like can't do, he can't clean his plates. So it's like when you really click with someone, like you're explaining, like you realize you're like willing to kind of just like look past these things that you've like pushed people to the side for before, because it just like feels right with them. So I try to like not like be too hard on myself when I'm like, oh, this person has a weird laugh, I'm gonna like move on, which is not actually something that's ever happened, just for the record. But like, just for example, like, oh, this person has a weird laugh, I don't want to see them again. Like if I was really feeling something special with them, then I wouldn't feel that way. So I try to give myself some grace where it's like, no, I don't think that I'm being surface level about it. I think that it doesn't feel right, and I'm looking for a reason why it doesn't. And one day it'll feel good and I won't be looking for excuses to move along. So I think you're right. Like that is it's a good counter argument. I think that there are so many benefits of the apps and detriments to the app. But you know, it's just about like trying to figure out, like psychoanalyze yourself in terms of like how you're making these decisions, and you could really like make them work for you. It's just, it really has to go the extra step of that kind of weeding out.
Yeah. Cause I know, and I'm sure you've had this too, I know that I've met people on the apps who I really think are lovely people who are checking a lot of boxes that I'm like, that's cool. She's got a cool job. She's good at it. She's confident in what she does. She seems really independent. She seems really she's in therapy. There's, you know, but then like you get together and just like that vibe check for whatever reason, sometimes it's hard to put a finger on. Yeah. And there's that. And that can be frustrating too. Cause then you start thinking like, well, am I just like incapable of being satisfied? Like, have the apps killed my ability to just choose a person, because this person's checking a lot of boxes. But sometimes in romance and love, it goes beyond checking boxes. And it really is a thing where it's like, you're not just looking for a person that checks a lot of boxes on the algorithmic worksheet that you've built. You are hopefully the person's not just a fucking mess. Hopefully they're an adult who has done some self-work, but you're also looking for a connection, for the intangibles, a thing where you're just like, I just want to be around that person. Yeah. I like being around them. And I do think that still occurs out there in the hellscape of digital dating, you know?
I mean, it's still happening for me. And like, I, you know, see the worst of the worst so constantly. And people are like, is this just like killing your ability to be on dating apps? It's like, not really, because like you find that the connection with someone in particular from an app, and it's like, okay, like this is why these have been around for so long. Like it's not all mess. It's just like keeping that patience, because when you find somebody that really works with, it's such a good feeling. And that's what keeps people trucking along on these apps.
Pulling the lever, hoping to get a jackpot. Because there's also that thing too, where I'm like, oh God, is everyone going to find the perfect person? Or I don't know. And then there's part of me that's like, yeah, maybe. Maybe no one should settle. Maybe no one should ever be settling. And everyone should be like, I'll die single if I can't find a person that makes me feel the way I think I deserve to feel.
Yeah.
And, you know, and like, and maybe that's right. Maybe that's how we should be. And that is part of our digital generation's shirking of the old generation, going like, I don't need to get married. I don't need to have kids. You know, I'm figuring out how to be okay as an individual person. And I only want to add someone to my experience if they're going to add something positive. I don't want to just have someone because having someone will make me feel complete.
Totally. You know? Yeah. People pushing against that is super, super like refreshing. That it's not, people aren't like, when are you getting married? It's like, are you wanting to get married? Is it like the questions are different. And I feel like that's making people like seek out relationships differently, because it's not really like reliant on like, can I like, you know, like use this person for like tax reasons? Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? It's like, Right. Well, people are finding relationships for different reasons now. And it's definitely a different era that we're in right now. It's unique. And I think a lot of that has to do with dating apps, or at least dating apps are a symptom of what's been going on with the current dating culture.
Yeah. So we've talked a lot about, you know, just what's going on psychologically with dating apps, how they work in society, what they're doing maybe to us, what the pros and cons are. I would be remiss. I've got you here. You share a lot of this stuff on your social media and on your podcast. I would be remiss if I didn't ask you, do you have any like good, like juicy, bad dating app stories? Like, have you ever been catfished or have like, do you have anything that you think off the top of your head you can share? I mean, I know that you share a lot on your podcast and on your social media and people can go look there, but do you have anything like off the top of your head that comes to mind, or anything recently, or any all-star moments that stand out?
Oh, I have an all-star moment and an awful moment. I'll tell both of them. The all-star moment. Excellent. I went on a date with a guy who, he planned this date where we both had like $30 to spend at Goodwill, and we bought each other outfits, just like the most ridiculous outfits. And then we went and got drinks, and then we had the waiters all vote on who had the best outfit, and whoever put together like the worst outfit had to pay for drinks. And I thought that was such a fun icebreaker date, because like, it's different than just like sitting and like chatting at a bar, which I also love to do. Like, I love going to a dive, but that was so cool. I was like, and I tell everybody about that date. It was so fun.
That sounds amazing. What a cute idea.
I know. It was great. And it was like, you know, like a year and a half into the pandemic. So like, we were still like, you know, like dining outside, and like it was an adjusted kind of date, and he made it work, and it was just fantastic. It was so fun.
Well, what happened with Goodwill guy? Why aren't you guys married?
I mean, he was one of the ones that like was on paper someone that I would expect to be into, but the chemistry just like was not there.
That happens.
And now he's with his soulmate. He like reconnected with someone from college, and they're like engaged. And so at the end of the day, everyone wins, but it was a great date. The worst dating app date I ever went on, this dude showed up like a half hour late, and I don't know why I didn't leave. Like, I feel like me today would have been like, I'm not staying, but me back then stayed. And he like blows in and just starts talking. He just like starts talking solid for like an hour. And he's getting like progressively drunker as he's talking. And I like have not gotten like a word in edgewise. And like a lot of what he's saying is trying to convince me that he's not religious, which like I didn't ask. Like, I didn't even consider. So later on, I went and checked in his tagged photos on Instagram, and he's like a youth pastor. So I was it was just a strange situation, but he ended up,
he was trying to convince you that he wasn't religious, but you went and checked and he was a youth pastor.
Yeah. For some reason, he got on this talk track about like, but I'm not religious though. Like I used to go to church. I'm not religious anymore. Like, he was just going on and on. And I'm just like, how did we get here? I didn't ask you a single question. but I think maybe he thought I had already done my due diligence. Who knows? But he ended up slut shaming me for I brought him to my house because he had gotten so blitzed that he like he wasn't going to drive home. I lived up the road from this place that we were at, and he was trying to drive. So I was like, how about you come back to my place and sober up? And so we were having just like a very like sitting on opposite ends of the couch kind of conversation. And he went and used my bathroom and found lube in my bathroom and did not know what it was. And so he asked me what personal lubricant is for. And so I explained to him, like sex ed style. And then he slut shamed me for like 20 minutes. Yeah. Yeah.
But he's not religious. And he doesn't have any religious informed sex negativity. Just so you know.
Not even an ounce. No, he was, that was probably my worst dating app experience. It was from top to bottom, just like a nightmare. So that was the worst that comes to mind first.
Okay. That's really awful. And, I again, people telling you who they are. You know, I know that when I was out there in the throes of alcoholism, I showed up to many dates drunker than I should have been. And just telling that person right off the bat, like, this is how it's going to be. I'm going to be drunk a lot. And I hope that's okay. And and sometimes it was. Sometimes they were like, me too. And I was like, great.
Awesome.
And sometimes they never called me again and I couldn't figure out why. You know, it's like, yeah. cause I was piss pants drunk when I showed up to the date and I probably talked the entire time and didn't ask them any questions. Yeah, that sounds awful. I want to get your thoughts on a quote here. We'll wrap up here pretty quickly, but I want to get your thoughts on a quote here while I've got you a little longer. Somebody in the comments just said, World Mind just posted this comment that said, the moment I meet an attractive woman, I have to start pretending I have no desire to make love to her. And that's a quote from someone named Roger Thornhill. I don't know who that is. But like, so I feel like that's what a lot of men hear or feel when we talk about men needing to present in a way that makes women feel safe.
Yeah.
And I want to get your take. Like, do you think that that's what that means? That like, you have to pretend like you don't, because again, on dating apps, I think that there is this element of like, what, one of the things I like about dating apps, to speak in defense of dating apps, there is this element of like cutting through that. If I approach a person in public, it could be innocent. Usually if I approach a person at a cafe or a bar and it's a woman and I just want to talk to her, she probably has a pretty good idea that I'm physically attracted to her. And that's why I came from across the room to talk to her. But I could be like, oh no, I just saw that the book you were reading and my friend was reading that book and I wanted to, you know, it could potentially be innocent. On a dating app, there's sort of this element of like cutting through and being like, I'm letting you know at a very surface level, and especially with men, that I'm attracted to you.
Yeah.
And that's why at least that I'm open to being attracted to you sexually. So like, do you feel like that's necessary, that men need to pretend like they have no desire to make love to you in order for you to feel safe? Because I don't think that's necessarily what it's about.
I feel like that, how I understood the quote right when you read it, was like this whole idea of like, you know, like the Andrew Tate stans that are out there that are like, sure, you know, like make sure that she feels like shit about herself. Like then she thinks that like you don't want anything to do with her and then maybe she'll want to fuck you. Like that's how I understood it. And maybe I'm a little jaded, but like in terms of the, like making sure that they feel safe, which is what I would love for that to mean. Maybe not. Like, I guess it depends on the person. Like some people need that to feel safe, that they aren't like being like seen as like an object in someone's eyes. But I'm also very sex positive. Like I am, you know, okay with having conversations about sex and like, you know, being open about like, are we here for the same thing? Like, are we trying to like get a long-term relationship out of this? Are we just trying to like fuck, you know, like it really depends on the person. But I mean, I can usually tell when a dude wants to smash, like they don't need to be, you know, completely acting like they don't want to for me to like feel like I can usually figure it out.
Yeah. I kind of feel like in either context, it just, that quote rubs me the wrong way. Like in the Andrew Tate context, of course, if it's someone who thinks that they need to like neg girls to like seal the deal. I'm like, yeah, you're a piece of shit and like gross. But it's also if it's someone who feels like if there's sort of this like incel vibe of like, oh, so I'm not even allowed to pretend that I'm attracted to you or you'll feel like I'm this dangerous person. And it's like, no, I don't think that that's what I think it feels linked to the idea that people, a lot of people have that like asking for consent is not sexy. There's a lot of guys that are like, oh, well, people don't like it. Like women don't think it's sexy when you ask. And I'm like, well, I think there are sexy ways to do it and there are unsexy ways to do it. If you make it a chore or if you belabor it or if you make it awkward, like I have certain things where I'm like, I never mention it on the first date. I don't even like, you know, I just am like, and if it gets mentioned, it'll be because she brings it up and then I'm like, oh, okay, she's bringing it up and letting it be known that that's a topic that she's interested in talking about, which tells me something. But like maybe on the second date or third date, if I feel like things are going well and there's chemistry, what I'll usually say is, usually I like to meet at my place if we're meeting up so that I still don't know where she lives and that it's like a safe thing for her and everything. But I might say something like, you're invited to come inside tonight if you would like, you know, and it's like something that simple where it's like, hey, totally okay if this is what you want, but you're invited to come upstairs tonight. And I might say something cheeky like, you're invited to come upstairs and make out a little bit if you want, you know, and then it's like kind of fun.
Yeah.
And it's like, like that usually goes pretty well. Cause it's also, I've had people be like, you know what? I don't think tonight. And I'm like, that's fine. Cool. Yeah. They're like, but I'd like to see you again. And I'm like, absolutely. Great. Yeah. And it's this thing that's like be a fucking adult about it and then be real about the fact that like, that's obviously a space that we might be going to if we are going on dates together. But I don't know, this idea that like I'm going to scare people or turn them off somehow if I make it known to them that I'm physically attracted to them. And it's like, no, I just think that too many men, it's like, don't know how to do that in a way that's not scary or intimidating or creepy or, yeah.
Yeah, no, absolutely. There's truly nothing sexier than consent. Like it's so, dudes that like, check in every step, but like if we're like making out and then like a hand like, you know, starts wandering and they're like, is this okay? Like that kind of like checking in is so great, like to like feel like you're being like an active participant in like where this is going.
It's hot.
It's super hot. So yeah, I mean like there are aspects of that quote, which is going back to how this all started, that's like, you know, like I guess I understand if I'm thinking about it at the most basic surface level, like let's not like make this woman feel like, you know, a fleshlight, like to, you know, if you think that she's attractive, then like, yeah, you know, cause this is a fully autonomous person that, you know, is going to be making decisions based on what they want to do and what's feeling right. So yeah, I don't know. There's levels to it, but
yeah, I just thought, yeah, I just thought it was interesting. And I thought, and I will say in defense of this comment or World Mind, this isn't something they were saying. They provided more context to the quote, and I'm not criticizing World Mind for posting the quote. I thought it was interesting to discuss, but they posted more context where this person, Roger Thornhill, said that Eve Kendall, who they were speaking to, says, "What makes you think you have to conceal it?" Roger Thornhill says, "She might find the idea objectionable. Eve Kendall responds, "Then again, she might not." And so that is sort of giving more context to the conversation that we were just having, where it's like, you don't necessarily need to conceal it. And again, in the dating app world, I think it's sort of assumed at a base level that it's like, there's at least something of a desire there. There's some kind of physical attraction. Otherwise we wouldn't be at this coffee shop meeting up. There's at least a curiosity about that. And we don't even need to talk about it to know that there's at least a curiosity there. And it would be weird to pretend like there's not, you know?
Absolutely. No, I completely agree.
Yeah. Okay. Well,
we talked
about a lot of stuff.
We did. So, no, this was a lot of fun. This is good. I feel like I could keep talking to you for like another like 3 hours about this. So I really appreciate you asking me to chat. Thank you so much.
Yeah, probably. I mean, we probably could keep talking. I definitely know there's like a lot more things that I could ask you about. If people want to hear you talk more about this and do comedic content about this, they can follow you on social media and follow your podcast, which are... Yep.
I am at Amelia Sampson, AmeliaSamson, on Instagram, Twitter, TikTok, all of that. And then the Holy Hour, which is spelled H-O-E-L-Y, hour, is on everything as well under that handle. So if you want more of me, that's where you can find me.
Excellent. Thanks so much, Amelia. It was so great to chat with you.
Thank you so much, Austin. It was great to chat with you, too. I'll talk to you soon.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye. Bye.
All right, there it is. That's it. That's Amelia Sampson. Thank you, Amelia, again for doing the show. It was lovely chatting with her. It's always fun when I get to meet people who I'm already like a fan of from the internet. And she was just as lovely getting to chat face-to-face as I imagine her to be from her videos. So that's always nice. Two, go follow her if you're not already doing that. Yeah, you know, I don't really have much else to say this week. Keep me in your prayers for my back and my body while I'm riding these horses. Keep me in your prayers that just one of these days it just clicks and all of a sudden my body gets it. Okay? Just however you pray. Whatever it is that you do, meditation, sending out energy, whatever it is, keep me in that, okay? Be like, I want Austin to be real strong and real macho and manly and good at horses, please. That's it. That's our show. People Pleaser is written, edited, hosted, and produced by me, Austin Archer, with original theme music also by me. You can find more of my music by going to austin-archer.com or by going to austinarchermusic.bandcamp.com, looking up Austin Archer on Spotify, Apple Music. You can support this show by going to patreon.com/austinarcher. Please do. Please do that. It's been a tough year starting out, not lying, in 2023, and the show is it's kind of on a lifeline right now, and we could use all the help we can get. So patreon.com/austinarcher. Thank you so much to my existing Patreon patrons. Love you all so much. Your support means the world to me, genuinely. Okay, that's it, everybody. Thank you for being here for another week of fun. We'll see you next week. Take care of yourselves, take care of each other. Until then, love ya. Bye-bye.